All right, Meghna, pop quiz. Tell me everything that you know about Ulysses S. Grant.
Last general of the Union Army in the Civil War, the guy who had the name who always, for in my mind, connected ancient Greece to Irish modernist literature and possibly an alcoholic.
Plus president.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Okay, well, well done. All right, so that's pretty much what we all remember from school, I imagine. But here's one thing that I didn't know. When Grant was a general in the Civil War, he issued an order expelling all of the Jews from the territory that was under his control at the time, basically the modern states of Tennessee, Kentucky, and Mississippi. It is known as General Order 11, and we have it right here. Read it with me.
Okay, December 17th, 1862, quote, "The Jews, as a class violating every regulation of trade established by the Treasury Department, are hereby expelled within 24 hours.
The order goes on, "Post commanders will see that all of this class of people be furnished passes and required to leave, and anyone returning after such notification will be arrested and held in confinement. So ordered by Major General Ulysses S. Grant." Sounds like something from 1930s Germany, but it was issued in Holly Springs, Mississippi, just weeks before Lincoln made the Emancipation Proclamation. And to the extent that this episode has been remembered at all, it's been known as a historic low point for anti-Semitism in America and a black hole of a mark on Grant's legacy. But it turns out the whole story is a lot more complicated than that. This all eventually led to important advances for Jews worldwide and a personal redemption for Grant. At least that's the narrative asserted in a new book by the dean of American Jewish historians who just so happens to live in Newton, Professor Jonathan Sarna of Brandeis University. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Always nice to be with you, Adam.
Explain first what Grant was so upset about.
In a word, the cause of the order was smuggling. Grant was deeply unhappy that so much cotton was being smuggled from the south to the north, and he blamed Jews for that widespread problem. Of course, we know that lots of people were smuggling. Indeed, you could make a lot of money, and a lot of Grant's soldiers were doing it. But we now also know, and this explains the timing, that Grant's own father, Jesse Grant, had cooked up a scheme with the Mack brothers, who were clothiers in Cincinnati, whereby he would help them to get passes from his son and would help them to shift a lot of southern cotton to the north. He'd get 25% of the profits. When Ulysses S. Grant realized that his own father was engaged in smuggling, he exploded. He sent the Mack brothers on the first boat back to Cincinnati, and according to eyewitnesses, he then and there wrote this order expelling Jews as a class from his war zone. In a sense, he expelled the Jews instead of his father.
That's incredible. I knew about Cincinnati as sort of the historic inland center for Jewish life in America at that time. I had no idea that there was a Jewish population to expel, like in the Mid-South. How many were there, and did they actually leave when ordered to?
Well, there certainly were thousands of Jews in the order in the area under Grant's command. Memphis was a significant Jewish community. The fascinating thing is that I couldn't even find 100 Jews who had been expelled. I suspect the number is smaller. There were Jewish traders around Holly Springs, and then, and this is important to the story, there are Jews expelled from Paducah. The reason so few Jews are expelled is that no sooner did Grant issue that order than his army was attacked from the rear, and as part of that attack, the telegraph lines were cut. And because the telegraph lines all around were cut, communications was down. I have a sense that the order traveled much more slowly. It took 11 days for that order to get from Holly Springs to Paducah. And when the Jews were expelled from Paducah, one of those Jews, named Caesar Caskell, rushed off to Washington with a copy of the order in hand. And that leads to the order being revoked by Abraham Lincoln.
So that's the story. Now, considering that these days you'd have a hard time getting elected president if you simply criticized Israel, it's a little hard to imagine that a man who expelled Jews as a class could get himself into the White House. But that's exactly what then happened to Grant. Did this issue come up in his campaign?
So the 1868 election, when Grant runs for president, is indeed the first presidential election when a Jewish issue, General Orders Number 11, is front and center in the campaign. The Democrats, who, I remind you, wanted to undo Reconstruction, who wanted to end voting by black Americans, wanted to remove troops from the South, they now had a way of attacking Ulysses S. Grant for this order.
Who was a Republican like
Lincoln.
And
it was discussed all across the country. Ulysses S. Grant does not respond during the election. Some of his aides do. But from the point of view of the Jewish community at that time, they have this terrible dilemma. Should we vote for a party that's bad for the country? Many Jews thought the Democrats, which an openly racist party at that time, would be a party bad for the country. Should we vote for a party bad for the country just to avoid voting for a man who had been bad to the Jews? And that was the dilemma.
Ultimately, Grant is elected president, and you write that once he's in office, this aspect of his personal history ends up factoring into his foreign policy. Talk about Russia.
Grant apologizes for the order after he's elected, and suddenly, soon after he gains office and he appoints for the first time a Jewish advisor, Jews are persecuted in Russia. And what do they want to do in Russia? They say Jews are smuggling. We want to expel Jews from Bessarabia. Now, I'm sure Grant's advisor said, Ulysses, don't touch this one. Everyone will remember you did the same thing with the same allegation. But instead, Grant does side with the Jewish community and put in a plea for the Jews not to be expelled, and speaks out strongly against persecution of the Jews. And soon after that, when Jews are persecuted in Romania, he actually arranges for a Jewish consul to be appointed to Romania with the understanding that he will look out for the interests of the Jewish community. Indeed, it's under Grant that we begin a foreign policy that takes into account human rights.
And then when he dies of cancer in 1885, there's even a rabbi at his funeral.
Yes, Rabbi E.B. M. Brown, who has befriended Grant in his latter years, is invited to participate in the funeral. It is held on Saturday. Brown wouldn't ride in a carriage on Saturday, and they make special provisions for him to walk the entire distance. Brown participates in the funeral, and every year thereafter, Brown makes a pilgrimage to Grant's tomb. He is the very last of the clergy who participate in the funeral who remains alive. And 30 years later, he's still going back to that tomb. Grant, right. We are here again. The Jewish community, when Grant died, considered him a hero. They had forgiven Grant. Indeed, he died the same week as Sir Moses Montefiore, who was the greatest Jew in the world at that time, and Jews mourned them both together. Of course, in the 20th century, when Grant's reputation declined, sank like a stone, much of this story that I have recounted in when General Grant expelled the Jews is forgotten, and instead all that is remembered is that, yeah, Grant was bad to the Jews too. Today I think it's worth recalling that this is a man who repented who, through his not only his words, but his actions, he turned from a Haman in the biblical story to a Mordecai. He turned from an enemy to a friend. And in a sense, it reminds us that great figures in history can learn from their mistakes, that hatred can be overcome.
Jonathan Sarna is the Dean of American Jewish Historians and, lucky for us, a professor at Brandeis University. His new book is called When General Grant Expelled the Jews. Find an excerpt of the book as well as an image of General Order 11 itself on our website, radioboston.org. Professor, a pleasure as always.
Thank you, Adam. Nice to be with you.
Well, tomorrow on the show, now that all its members have been named, Steve Crosby, head of the state's Gaming Commission, will join us to talk about next steps in licensing casinos in Massachusetts. And we'll go behind the scenes to one of those places that would love one of those licenses. A look at the migrant workers at Suffolk Downs. That's tomorrow.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangle@boston.com. I'm Adam Ragusea.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.